This is exactly right.
Hi, I'm Erin Welsh.
And I'm Erin Alman Updike, and we're the hosts of This Podcast Will Kill You on Exactly Right.
We're back with our seventh season, which is bigger and better than ever.
Because guess what? We're now a weekly show.
This season, we're tackling everything from long COVID to norovirus, from the supplement industry to IVF, and so, so much more.
New episodes drop every single Tuesday.
Follow This Podcast Will Kill You wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, Scotty, you ready?
Curdy B, I'm so ready to just laugh and laugh and laugh.
Mom loses $820,000 injury claim after she was pictured tossing a Christmas tree.
Oh, boy. Oh,
it's a wild one. It's a wild one.
That is. Well, if you're a fan of getting caught barking up the wrong tree, sit back, relax. It's going to be a beautiful episode of the Bananas Podcast.
Guys, gals, non-binary pals, welcome to Bananas. I'm sitting across from Scotty Landis, Banana Boy number two.
There is my guy, Kurt Brownoler. Thanks for listening to the silliest little podcast there ever was. Yes, we're known as the most dangerous men in podcasting, but don't be afraid.
Don't be afraid.
We're the bad boys of comedy. You know this, but we're just going to help you glide into this week and put all your fears behind you. Just enjoy yourselves.
Scotty, I have some news for you.
What you got?
It's not good news, I'll tell you that much.
What the hell does that mean?
So, you know, Bananas is my number one love. You know that. But I
do love it.
I had a podcast called I Love My Kid But. Okay. And it was a very good podcast with Chris Garcia and Megan Gale. We talked about parenting and how hard it is.
Oh my God.
Was fire. It was good.
Well, I thought
and
it was a great podcast.
Wondery canceled it this week.
Dude,
we haven't even been on for a year. We started in May. They canceled it in March.
Well, I'm sorry to hear that.
And it's a good podcast. So if anyone's listening out there and you were a fan of I Love My Kid, but this is what I want you to do.
Oh, I see.
I want you to go on, give the show 5-star rate and review right now.
Yes.
And then just write something along the lines of Wondery fucked up.
That sounds good.
Yeah. So like, let's just get a whole bunch of 5-star reviews saying Wondery is dumb for canceling this podcast.
Yeah, that's crazy.
Because they are dumb. Like, they put so much time and effort into forming this thing. We had a 5-camera shoot and everything, and then just pulled the plug on it before it had a year to find its audience. It's such a bad business model. It makes me insane. This whole industry sucks.
I love all three of you guys. I think you should find another podcast to do with those two. I listen to that podcast quite often because I like how you alternated who kind of led the main story at the beginning. And I say they're lost. They're going to feel it.
They're going to feel it.
I'm shopping on Alibaba only from here on out.
It's only Alibaba for us. Oh, man. Well, let's get to our guest. I'm so excited, Scotty.
Our guest today, Curdy B, was ranked the greatest thing I ever made in God Almighty magazine. Actors Weekly said she's better than 5 Meryl Streeps combined, and you can currently hear her on Call of Duty Modern Warfare as Farrah Kareem, and then you can also watch her playing the villainous role of Victoria Newman on the most popular show in the history of TV ever, The Boys. Ladies and gentlemen, guys, gals, and non-binary pals, welcome our friend Claudia Dumit. How are you?
What a weak intro.
That's one of our hallmarks, is a real weak, limp-wristed intro.
Yeah.
That was great. I feel the pressure. I'm doing fantastic. I also love that you guys do a podcast at 3 p.m. Mm-hmm. on a weekday. Mm-hmm.
It's easy, right?
Horrifically beautiful thing. Okay, yeah.
As opposed to what time would you imagine the podcast to be?
I don't know. Maybe because my brain doesn't function at 3 p.m. I'm holding on very tightly to a coffee right now. So You know.
Yeah, we do do it. We do it like after we get all our work, other work done for the day.
That's good.
And then
that's
it's
good.
This
priorities.
Is the real. This is the hangout. This
and
is
then
the hangout
before happy hour. It's a real sweet spot for us.
We're oh yeah, Scotty's drinking again. He did dry 69.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Mm-hmm. How that is that 69 days?
69 days of no alcohol consecutive. It was great. I also had a physical today, which was like perfectly timed. Oh, so I started drinking again last Sunday. Went to a bar with Mikey and Strawberry and drank 7 margaritas. Just to the moon.
Where did you end up?
Where'd you end up
at the end of the night?
Did you go to Los Compadres?
I went to La Valida in Franklin Village, right near the UCB, and then walked home. I thought the smart choice would be I'm going to stretch it out, air it out. So woke up, no hangover, feeling good.
Oh, that's
beautiful.
Wonderful.
So happy for you.
And Claudia, we invited our listeners to do it. Also, Kurt, I had to reorder 30 more bumper stickers. I think we've had 70 people do a dry 69. Unfortunately,
oh my God.
Not 69.
I wish it would have been 69 doing 69.
But congratulations to everybody that sobered up.
Yeah.
Fantastic.
Good.
Do you feel better? Do you feel like a better human being?
I feel better than other people.
That's great.
Yeah, I feel elevated above others.
That's good.
I slept.
That's
really
the main
well.
Thing.
I slept like a rock.
That's the most important thing, according to all the podcasts out there that talk about that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That and no processed food. I was just trying to think about all of the rules about being healthy and how almost like half of them contradict the other half. And I can't. Mm-hmm. And I just can't because it's so stressful to think about your food in like relationship to like it being some sort of medicine or poison. I hate it.
Absolutely.
It's all you can, there's no other option. It's like, it's bananas are killing you. Coffee's killing you. You should have more coffee. Why aren't you having any tea? Tea has plastics in it. Like you can't.
I know. There's Friday. This is Friday afternoon for
Happy
you, everybody.
Friday afternoon.
Bananimals, I recently took a photograph of my entire family that was like perfect. It was like a perfect family photo. You know, like the kids looked good. Like kids never look good in photos. My wife looks like super hot. My mother-in-law has her eyes open, which never happens. And I was just like, what can I do with this photo? And then I realized, you know what I'm going to do with it? I'm going to send it over to my mother-in-law's Aura Frame because I have the app on my phone. I did it immediately. She was delighted the next time she looked at it because it just showed up there. And with Aura Frames, the pictures that you take, all of your favorite photos can actually go on to live full lives. Aura Digital Photo Frames, guys, are a stylish and convenient way to display thousands of photos that you take. Their modern design is clean and simple and strategically hides the cord. You'd never know it was a digital frame, and you don't. It's a very good-looking frame. And also, there's no touching or swiping on the screen itself, although you can do that. But if you don't want to, this very subtle little bar on the top where you can just rub it and just slide to the next photo or slide back to a photo that you enjoyed. It's really a delight. I can't say enough good things about the Aura photo frame. Right now, you can save on the perfect gift that keeps on giving by visiting AuraFrames.com. For a limited time, listeners can get $20 off their best-selling frames with code BANANAS. That's AuraFrames.com, promo code BANANAS. Terms and conditions apply.
Curdy B, do you want to give us a strange news story that we can just laugh at and have the best time listening to?
Claudia, would you like to hear a strange news story?
Always.
Okay. Here it is. This one, on the surface, I do feel doesn't sound super crazy.
Yeah.
The details of it are more and more bonkers. Here it is. Mom loses $820,000 injuries claim after she was pictured tossing a Christmas tree. So this was on NBC News. We actually posted this a while back, and I've been holding on to it because I just think the story is so crazy. It was written by Yulia Talmazan.
Ooh, so good.
Thank you.
Fantastic.
Best in the business.
Fantastic.
Here it is. Her case was felled by a Christmas tree throwing competition.
Good writing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
A court in Ireland dismissed a mother's $820,000 insurance claim after a picture emerged of her winning a contest to see who could toss a tree the farthest. The photo is amazing. She's like in her 20s, it looks like. And she is, it's a big Christmas tree. I would say it's a 7-foot Christmas tree.
That's a huge tree.
And she heaving it. It is above her head. And she's like a petite woman. It's a very funny photograph.
Yeah.
So Camila Grabska, 36, had claimed that a car accident in 2017 left her with debilitating pain, leaving her unable to lift heavy bags and keeping her in bed on bad days, according to disclosures made at Ireland's High Court and reported by the Irish Independent newspaper. The constant pain in her back, neck, and thoracic spine left her unable to lift groceries, do chores, or play with her two children.
Oh, boy.
The newspaper reported the disclosures made the court sitting in Limerick as saying... She sued RSA Insurance on the basis that she could not work for over 5 years, claiming past and future loss of earnings amounting to $542,000 of her total claim.
Oof, my God.
Her case came unstuck when a photo published in the newspaper almost a year after her accident showed Grabska winning. The fact that she won is the best part. Like, of course she shouldn't have competed at all, but to actually, even if she had just placed second, she probably wouldn't be photographed.
No photo.
The picture taken in January 2018 shows Grabska wearing a yellow jacket, forcefully throwing the tree in the town of Ennis in Western Ireland, where the championship based on an old lumberjack competition takes place. The winner is the person who throws it the farthest. A second picture published the day showing her smiling as she holds a mounted certificate declaring her the champion.
Oh my God.
When she was cross-examined in court, Grabska says she still felt pain when she threw the Christmas tree and was smiling in photos because she was trying to live a normal life. But Judge Carmel Stewart, who presided over the case, said she had no choice but to dismiss the claim because of the very graphic picture of Grabska throwing a gigantic Christmas tree. And so that is, wow. I mean, like, that's amazing to me.
It's amazing.
This is just like that film, Anatomy of a Fall. Mm-hmm.
Yes, who did it? Who threw it?
It's the same thing, except the husband is a tree, you know? It's the exact same premise of the movie.
It is so nearsighted, though. Like, even just enter the contest with a fake name. If you're so desperate to throw a Christmas tree, just say you're Jan Smith and that you love trees. But like, she just painted herself into the worst corner and lost so much money.
Don't wear yellow as well, you know? Yes. Just be just incognito. Just get in there, wear a wig.
Dress like a
you
tree.
You can compete.
Yeah.
I'm curious as to who handed the photo in, though. That's that. The gossiper in me is just thinking who's... It's a rival. It's whoever was second. It's something like that, you know?
Yeah.
I'm curious as to
beaver.
Who handed it.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah,
I mean, neighbor.
I mean, if this is probably her first Google hit. Do you know what I mean? Like, you win a Christmas tree throwing competition, you pop her name in Google, that's the first photo is her throwing this Christmas tree.
My goodness. I had a friend that this happened to. He was a beer delivery guy. He worked for like a big distributor, and he hurt his ankle in the job, and part of the workers' comp is his company hired a private eye that followed him for like a year. So every time we would go out to a movie or whatever, if he wasn't like limping, basically if he did anything that seemed athletic, went up the stairs too fast, but he would come out and be like, there he is right there. Like, he would be like, that guy's following me. And they just were trying to prove his workers' comp.
Yep.
Nightmare.
Nightmare.
You know what? I have a relationship with that too. I can't say who, but someone close to me in my life played that game for about 10 years.
Really?
My God.
10 years.
And so it was successful?
But did they really win in the end? You know, I mean, for 10 years, they were like, I can't do this. I can't do that. Because what if they get what if they catch me and then I don't get my workers' comp?
Yep. Oh, wow.
So that happened for 10 years to the point where we had we would have phone calls together and we'd discuss it. And I'd say, why don't you just get a job here? Or why don't you just do that? And they'd say, let's not, because we'd be on FaceTime and they wouldn't want me saying anything that would incriminate them.
What? That's
what?
Crazy.
That, like, they had tapped their FaceTime?
Yes! The government had tapped the FaceTime call.
This government.
You know?
I'm so against
you know?
It was a government
workers'
comp.
Can't trust it anyway, really. You know? Can't really.
I think we could err on the side of giving more workers' comp. I think that's fine.
I think so, too. I think that's fine. I don't care that, honestly, she should get the money.
It sounds like
I don't care.
Pretty fun. I'm trying to think if I've ever even thrown any type of tree before.
I take my tree. Now we have a fake tree, but this was the first year of fake tree. But every year before this, I would take the tree out. And our tree is like 7 feet tall. And it is very heavy. It is incredibly heavy. And it hurts to hold it a little bit. You have to have like gloves on and stuff. So
it's prickly.
She's strong.
Full commitment. I got served papers in 2013. I was at my house. Somebody knocked at the door, and I just went to answer the door. And they were like, are you Scott Landis? I go, yeah. And they go, here. And I was like, what the hell? And it was, I had somebody subletting in my place in New York for 2.5 years. And they figured it out. And even though you're allowed to sublet, they served me papers saying they knew I was subletting and that if I didn't like have them go out at the end of that next lease year, that I would have to go back to New York and go to court and like fight for it. So I had to call our friend Chris and another cheesemonger that moved into my room and be like, and the cheesemonger was like, no, I also got served. And so someone in California walked up to my door and I was like, I felt very special. I hoped it was Publishers Clearing House, but it wasn't. It was just a nerdy PI, and it felt like a gotcha moment. I really got.
Ooh. And so wait,
sorry.
You just had to kick everybody out?
Yeah.
Yeah, what happened?
So at the end of the lease, which was like 3 months away, I had to fly back and make sure it was empty. And it was like, but they were like, yeah, really weird. I think we're allowed to stay here. Should we like claim squatter's rights or something? And I was like, if you want to. And then they found a place. And so it just was a total inconvenience, basically. The story ends with me being wildly inconvenienced, having to move out one closet full of stuff that I didn't remember I had, which is always horrible. It's basically like a storage unit. So teachable moment for me.
Teachable. Nice. That reminds me of the lady who was the squatter in that huge place in LA.
Yes.
Am I telling a half-baked story?
No.
Where she was just like squatting there for, I don't know, it had been over a year, and it's this huge Airbnb, and she just claimed squatter's rights.
Yes. There was a year-long rave in one in Beverly Hills on like LeBron James' street, and they could not get them out.
That's fascinating.
It's so fascinating.
There was a guy we just did a story about who tried to, he essentially would not be evicted from the New Yorker Hotel in New York, and then went further and claimed that he actually owned the New Yorker Hotel and then started to try and take rent from other people who lived at the hotel.
Awesome.
I honestly, I have some kind of admiration for these people, though, because I don't have the balls or the delusion, whatever you call it. Like, I don't have it, and I wish I did, because I'd get a place rent-free for a year, maybe.
Yeah.
Or own a building.
Or own a building.
Well, I guess I'm just glad this woman won. Ultimately, I'm glad she did win, even though it cost her $500,000 or whatever. You know what? If you're going to blow it out so big they don't forget you.
Yeah. No, I mean, she definitely lost this over a delightful photograph. The photograph is worth it. Also, her pants, I just noticed this. Her pants, she's wearing like athleisure. And her pants are like skin tight. And then just down the side, it says, I just can't.
Like it.
in the Just Do It logo. It says,
beautiful.
I just can't.
Oh,
while
God.
with this 7 foot Christmas tree, Michael like a Jordan foot over here. Her head.
Beautiful. God, she's beautiful.
It's like a Renaissance painting.
Yes,
almost.
It really is.
It's really beautiful.
It is. Claudia, I have one for you. So you're from Australia. And they called what we call drunk driving, drink driving, right? It's what
drink driving.
Isn't that interesting?
Because most people are like actually drinking in the car while they do it.
Drink driving. Yeah. Oh yeah, I guess you call it drunk driving.
Yeah.
Drink driving.
Drink.
I don't know, maybe something about the present tense does something.
That's what I was wondering.
Maybe it has some kind of psychological effect on us. Drink driving. It feels a little bit more illegal,
active,
current. Yeah, it's happening.
It's current.
Currently.
Oh yeah.
Are you drink driving? Yeah, it's very intense. We're very intense when it comes to that in general.
Yes.
Yeah. We don't fuck around. Can I swear?
Yeah
of course.
Boobs, turd, other words.
Fantastic. Yeah.
We were staying in, we were going to visit, I had an Australian girl from Melbourne, and we were in Tasmania. And
I love that you said Melbourne correctly.
Thank you.
Right.
And then we were driving from, Launceston, Lawnie, down to like the Tasmanian coast. And she was like, we stopped at a bar to have a drink. And then she was just like, and then this is where we get the roadie for the last hour of the car ride. And then we both got drinks. And I was like, this is how you do it in Tasmania.
This is it. You can't. You better not have anything. You better be below that limit.
Bananimals, we've all been there. It's the end of a long work day. You're aimlessly wandering around a grocery store. You're hungry. You're tired. You don't know what meal you're going to cobble together. And it's a nightmare. Fortunately, with Factor, you can enjoy fresh, chef-crafted meals from the comfort of your own home in 2 minutes. 2 minutes. You cannot even order takeout that fast. It's very easy to do. Each week, you choose from over 35 of Factor's fresh, never frozen meals, and they get delivered right to your front door. You're feeling good, and you're eating good, and it lasts all day long. Plus, Factor has over 60 add-ons to choose from, like cold-pressed juices, egg bites, chocolate coconut macaroons, and so, so, so much more. From breakfast to midday bites to delicious dinners, Factor is the perfect solution for fast, premium options with no cooking required, and we got a code for you. But first, let me tell you what I got delivered to my front door. I went vegetarian. They do have veg options. I had the Caribbean spiced tofu. I had garlic and herb roasted mushrooms. I opened my door. The meals were sitting there. I warmed them up. I ate them. They're fantastic. Head to factormeals.com/bananas50 and use our code bananas50 to get 50% off. That's code bananas50 at factormeals.com/bananas50 to get 50% off. Here's a good one. Paige sent this in. Paige, I didn't know your last name, so we're just going with Paige, which is a lovely name. This was in globalnews.ca, that's Canada, written by best in the drunk business, Ryan Rocca.
Oh, thank you, Ryan.
These names.
Ryan Rocca.
I know.
I love it.
Impaired man rearrested after driving to police station to drive about his first arrest.
What to what about his first arrest?
Complain. He drove back to the police station to complain about his first arrest. I just thought we'd double on the smart criminals.
He's rearrested.
Yes, and it's as good as you think. And I'll let you guess his age before I reveal it at the very end.
Okay. Ooh.
A drunk man drove to a police station to complain about an early arrest, only to be arrested again for impaired driving, a police in Durham region say. Durham Regional Police said that early Tuesday, officers responded to a call about an intoxicated man who was causing a disturbance and refusing to leave a restaurant in the Brock and Rosland Roads area of Pickering. The man was arrested for being intoxicated publicly and failing to leave this restaurant. He was given a provincial offense notice.
Sounds delightful.
I'd like one of those, please. And taken to his family home nearby where he was left with his mother. A short time later, the man apparently arrived at Durham Regional Police Station. He went into the lobby to speak with a supervisor and complain about his arrest. While speaking to the officers, signs of alcohol impairment could still be detected. It was confirmed the male had driven himself to the police station, and he was given a breath test. The man failed the breath test and was arrested again.
Okay, I have my guess. I have my age guess already. Claudia, do you have your age guess yet?
I had mine for a while, and then I switched it at the last minute.
Okay.
Do you want to say it at the same time?
Yeah, ready?
I love that. Three. Two, one.
54.
52. Oh!
Wow.
42.
Yes.
42.
Pretty old.
Damn it.
It's old enough. Go ahead.
That was my initial guess. I was like, he's in his early 40s. He's in his early 40s because he's old enough.
But they took him to his mom's house.
Like, it's old enough.
But he's living.
I feel like he's old enough to complain. Is
yes,
what it
he's
is.
Old enough to complain, but it's embarrassing because he lives with his mom. That's why I think Scotty said that. That's why. But and then I went to 52 because it was even more embarrassing. So,
42-year-old Ajax man has been charged with operation while impaired. The vehicle was impounded for 7 days, and his license has been suspended for 90 days.
I think that is okay. I think
that's
if that guy, I think if you go to complain about being drunk to the cops who arrested you for being drunk, I feel like, yeah, you shouldn't be driving.
I feel like it's a Dr. Jekyll, Mr. Hyde mm-hmm. thing. Mm-hmm. Like he only mm-hmm. gets that persona mm-hmm. when he's intoxicated. And so he only has the chutzpah to go to the police station and complain about it yeah. in the same state.
Or he's so. Just yeah. wonderful with directions when he's drunk, but all other times he just gets lost all the time. But then he's like, to get shit done, I got to get drunk. I mean, yeah. hours yeah. later, I'm still drunk. I was...
what was the thing? Provincial? A provincial arrest?
It was called... That's a great question. It was called...
Provincial offense notification. Something? P-O-N?
Yes. He was initially given a provincial offense notice.
Yeah.
It sounds so delicate. It's like a spa treatment.
It's really nice.
I love it.
Yeah, is it put
British?
It over your desk.
Yeah.
Canadian,
see what I got?
Canadian, I believe.
Canadian.
I believe. I was in Starkville, Mississippi once, and I was about 21 years old. And we were in this area called the Cotton District, and we were doing brunch at this restaurant, and we were sitting outside, and it was early. It was like 10:30, 11 in the morning. And one of the top five drunkest women I've ever seen in my entire life comes shuffling up the sidewalk, like clearly didn't go to her home that night, but just 9 sheets to the wind. And she walks into this restaurant, it's called Bin 612, I think. And as soon as she walks in, you just hear one of the servers or bartenders go, "No, nope, get out."
Yeah. I love that.
And then we hear her speak, and you just hear her go, "Fuck you. I left my credit card here last night." And they go, "No, you didn't." And she goes, "Yes, I did." And we're laughing, and we're all like, it's the other thing too, where you're not trying to make eye contact with the person. Yeah. You're just trying to let it play out. But our table's silent at this point.
You're engaged, but silently.
And she's like, "Yes, I did." And they go, "No, you didn't. You check your pockets." And so she starts feeling around in her pants, and she reaches into her back pocket, and her credit cards and license were in her her back pocket. And so... So she starts walking out to leave, and she's like, "God, fuck off." Like, she's still just pissed off. And they go, "Sarah, if you keep doing this, you can't sing here anymore." She was a nightly performer at old Bin 612 who just got so drunk. The confidence.
It feels like you watched a black box theater performance.
Yes,
in the bar, right?
Oh God, it would have been Academy Award winning. Just like the "No, I left it here," and they're like, "No, you did not." She's like, "Fuck you, I did." Turns out she was probably singing at the 8 p.m. show.
Oh, Sarah. I love that idea that was a black box theater performance.
Yeah. Yeah,
because we used to do this thing. It's so dorky. It's such a theater school thing to do.
Do it, say it.
But in New York, we would sit on a stoop and then just like pick a frame for a space across the street, like in the Lower East Side, and then just be like, anything that happens like in this frame is scripted, and we would just like say it to each other and then just sit there and like watch things happen. And it is riveting when you assume meaning behind random interactions of strangers on the street. It becomes like beautiful and amazing because everything is heightened and everything seems more important. It was like one of my favorite things, to the point where I had like a show in Montreal. And it was called "Don't Trust Me," and it was all this thing about "Don't trust me, don't trust me." And then at the end, I say, "Who is willing to trust me?" And if you're willing to trust me, you had to like come up on stage and get a blindfold, and then go back down. And then I would do like my closing bit, and then the show ends. And then I'm like, "If you have a blindfold, follow me." And we would walk backstage and then outside, where we had two stage hands holding up a big frame. And then everybody's blindfolded, and they would come out, and there would be this huge frame, and then just painted on the frame says, "Everything in this frame is intentional." And then I had like a little, little jam box, and I would start playing like essentially music that sounded like a soundtrack to a movie. So the movie soundtrack would start, and then they would all take off their things, and then we would just sit there for like 10 straight minutes in silence. And it was so fucking fun and cool.
Did anybody live up to the hype? Did anybody start juggling or doing cartwheels or anything?
There was definitely a couple nights where it was like just a kind of a perfect frame on a corner in Montreal that was like very populated and like a lot of stuff would start happening. But I don't remember any like specific thing. But people would be sitting there and then start laughing at something that happened and stuff like that. And people didn't know if like that was real. Like they didn't know if I had like hired people to go do something, you know?
That reminds me, speaking of just like weird theater school experiments or experiences, things that like they would tell you to do. Yours sounds beautiful and magical and lovely. But we had a class where like 1 week the exercise or the homework would be try to live in the world without one of your senses. Mm. Like go out into the world and pretend to be deaf.
I'm doing it right now.
Pretend to be blind.
Instructor,
I'm doing it. I'm living it. And interact with people. And yes.
Oh, so it wasn't like you would tape your mouth shut or something. You would just like pretend to be deaf?
You're going out and interacting with the world. And and it's the first term of classes. So a lot of us, we want to get the homework done. Mm-hmm. And there was a Starbucks right on the corner next to our school. Mm-hmm. And so a lot of us would do our exercises at the Starbucks because we get our morning coffee and then go to the morning class.
So you'd incredible.
So you'd go into the Starbucks. And you, it's horrible. You'd get these poor baristas. You'd go into the Starbucks, and so you're pretending you're deaf. And so you'd have a notepad, and you'd go, one tall latte, please, with oat milk. And you'd show it to the cashier, and they'd go, okay, great, and they'd go and do it. But in retrospect, looking back at it, we're the same people coming in every single day.
Every ailment.
Yeah.
So one day I'm coming in and I'm deaf, and the next day I'm coming in and I have an Irish accent, and the next day I'm coming in and I just like it was hilarious when we all thought about it.
Oh yeah,
that's so funny.
Smells great. Not today.
And these cashiers must have just been like, these fucking drama kids, these fucking drama school kids just coming
100%.
In. 100%.
Drama kids do have an eagerness to please that maybe supersedes anything else in the world. I don't know of any other type of, like, first-year acting students are like, I need the spotlight. I need to show everybody I am number one at this skill. And then you look back and you're like, oh, I was terrible.
I'm horrible, but I didn't know it at the time, so the confidence was through the roof.
Yes. I think when you and I were first talking about how you started out and stuff, I'm pretty sure you told me that you tried to get into acting school or film school and didn't get in, right? Your first attempts to get into an acting school, they were like, no, thank you.
Yeah, they were, it was a very lovely breakup and I was heartbroken. They were like, they're like, you're not right for this. No, they're Australian. Why am I doing this? They're like, you're not right for this. You're not right for this. Go out into the world and get some experience and come back. And then I left the country. Good. Never returned.
And you won. And you came to Hollywood and have been on many shows. And that's fantastic.
I won. And I went back home.
I love that so much. Kristen Schaal has a similar story where one of her acting teachers from Northwestern told her, she said, look, you're not good at this and you should quit.
But honestly.
Like, and then she saw her like years later on the street and was just like, I just want you to know, like, I didn't quit, and I'm successful as an actor.
It's the push you need, though. It's, weirdly enough, like, it was very helpful. It was a helpful, bad thing that happened when I was 17 and just sad about
it. They weren't ready for you.
But even like the people, even like my mentors and teachers that I looked up to were like, you should leave the country. They were like, you're not going to work here. And I was like, okay. Like, that's it was insane. Just such a...
That's so crazy. Because no one knows. That's the craziest part. It's such a subjective industry. No one knows at all. For people to be like, this is how it is. To tell people, young people, how it is such... It's bullshit. It makes me mad.
Yeah. It's... But it's... It just... prepares you for the onslaught of rejection that you're going to face.
Yeah,
because it's inevitable. Like, you're going to be rejected a whole bunch. Yeah.
And it never stops. And no matter how successful you are, they find new ways to make you feel like a loser.
It really?
To say not you. Yeah, yeah.
It's so crazy. It's the main reason I really hope both my children do not choose anything.
Pursue the arts.
Anything in the arts. I just don't. I just, that life of rejection, constant rejection is so, it's just, I hate it so much.
I know it is not, but like, you get used to it.
You do.
Weirdly enough, you get, I'm just like, yeah, cool. Next one.
Yeah, next one. Okay. Fine.
Like, it's just, yeah, you just become not numb to it, but you just, I don't know. You move through it.
Yes.
To get,
yeah, you swim in a sea of rejection.
Yeah.
Like a little fish.
Yeah. I don't
little
even sad feel fish. It anymore. I just am like, all right. Okay.
Feel nothing.
We'll see.
Let's yeah, the only thing I hate is the waiting. That's the only part, like the waiting to be rejected. I'm just like, I got it's fine if you want to reject. I just got to move on. Just like, do it now.
Just tell me.
Just
tell
do it
me.
Now.
Yeah, for those listening at home, if you ever send a risky text, or if you're a little older, passed a note between classes, that time where you waited to get a response for them to check your yes box or your no box, or to respond to your risky text, we all live that 4 to 5 times a day for a 25-year career. So that feeling, that's what we're talking about. It is a waking nightmare, but when it works, you're like, I am... I'm
walking
on sunshine. It is good.
The highs are high and the lows are so constant. All right. Here's one to bring us into our shout outs. Marijuana munching rats infiltrate police headquarters in New Orleans. Chief warns they're all high.
That's fun. I mean,
it's a fun
seems
title.
Easier to it's catch rats title. That are high, right? Yeah, let's do some thumbs ups.
Yeah, give them to me. Thumbs ups.
Thumbs ups. Lauren wants to thumbs up her friend Jackie and Michaela for a 1-year anniversary of their shop. It is called Biss, B-I-S-S. It is on Front Street in Salem, Massachusetts. It's a houseplant and curated goods shop.
Yeah. Congrats.
I mean, to keep a business around for a year, good for you, Jackie.
Thumbs
Michaela.
Up.
Bananimals, if you go to, you know, we have a lot of murder bananas. If you go to see witch history, if you want to learn about witches in Salem, Massachusetts, take a little detour. Go to Biss. Buy yourself a house plant. Name it Beltane or something. I don't know. But go check out Biss. Congrats, gals. Crystal Davis in Australia. I've heard of that.
Oh, me too.
Is thumbs up in Kurt. Kurt, Crystal what? Says it's 11:56 p.m. here and it's my birthday. I am sick. I just turned 42. I have a 3-year-old. Everyone else is asleep, and I just watched Perfectly Stupid. You son of a bitch, it was spectacular. Thank you. You made my night. Banana Girl number 42.
Thank you. Thank you.
That's nice.
That's such a kind thing.
If anybody hasn't watched Kurt's Perfectly Stupid stand-up special, you still can, you losers. Get out there. It's spectacular.
It's
Banana Girl 42 says so. I'll do 2 more quickies.
Okay.
Kate Cosgrove. Our
yes, Kate.
Good, dear,
we
beloved
love
friend is a children's book illustrator, and she has
She's
a
excellent.
Brand new book today.
Ooh.
It's called Just Flowers. It's beautiful. Erin Dealey is the author, and everything Kate does is incredible. So spoil
really
your
gorgeous.
Kids. Spoil someone else's kids. Go get the book Just Flowers. I know I will.
Thumbs up, Kate.
Thumbs and up, Kate. And last but not least, let's see. We have so many. Oh, here's a fun one. This one's really interesting. Andrew Bosworth is thumbs-upping himself and thumbs-upping his colleagues.
It's really funny to say.
It's way
really
better.
I
delightful.
I love it.
It's bordering on dirty, but not quite. Andrew Bosworth is thumbs-upping himself and his colleagues, Andre in London and Vicky in Athens. I think Athens, Greece. Not Georgia, but maybe Georgia. Andre and Vicky were recently certified to teach the Nikolai Demidov method of acting. They are the only 3 people in the world with that certification.
Wow.
What?
It is the Nikolai Demidov method of acting. And any Bananimal actors out there, look them up. It's a new approach to acting training. And I guess Google Andrew Bosworth, Nikolai Demidov method acting. Method of acting. I don't know.
I'd thumbs up myself for that.
Yeah, thumbs up.
One of three. I'd thumbs up.
So thumbs up, guys, gals, yeah, and actors everywhere.
Thumbs straight up. And of course, we're here with the wonderful and fantastic Claudia Dumais.
How are you doing so far? Hey. You enjoying it?
Good. Great.
You're more than halfway done. Can you even believe it? You're like 3/5 done.
Great. I feel like I should be saying more things. I feel like I should be jumping in.
No.
But you're doing wonderfully. I'm having a great time.
No, you're doing fantastic. And please jump in more if you want to. We are open to your jumping.
I feel like I'm just going to speak over you, though. And everything in my just like Catholic guilt. I don't want to do that to you. I just want to respect you. You have to finish your sentence and then I'll jump in right after.
It's zooming. Zooming does that to people.
It's the Zoom.
Tough.
Yeah.
Curdy B, what the heck was that story?
Marijuana munching rats infiltrates police headquarters in beloved Party City. Chief warns they're all high. This was sent in by the delightful and wonderful Corey Creeth. Thanks, Corey Creeth.
Wonderful.
This one is from ABC News, written by the Associated Press. So I guess it's more from the Associated Press.
There we go.
New Orleans police chief says conditions at the department's aging headquarters are so deplorable that rats have munched on marijuana contraband in the evidence locker. New Orleans. Rats have gotten into confiscated pot at New Orleans aging police headquarters, munching the evidence as the building is taken over by mold and cockroaches, said the city's police chief. The rats eating our marijuana, they're all high. Police Superintendent Ann Kirkpatrick told New Orleans City Council members. Kirkpatrick described vermin infestation and decay at the offices that have housed New Orleans police since 1968, saying officers have even found rat droppings on their desk. The police department did not immediately respond to an email request Wednesday when they discovered marijuana was eaten by rats or whether any cases were impacted. I mean, like, that's evidence. I love it. Also, if it's marijuana being held as evidence, like, eat away, rats.
Yeah, who cares?
Eat away.
You know, I feel like we're enjoying the splendor of marijuana. Like, why can't the rats?
Yeah. Why? I mean, like, I don't know. Why is there so much marijuana in lockup? It's Louisiana. Is it still illegal in Louisiana? Maybe it is.
But in New Orleans? I mean, I guess.
Who gives a shit in New Orleans? Seems like marijuana is the absolute last thing you should worry about in New Orleans.
Yeah, that's really true. But apparently rats love eating weed. I didn't know this.
Yeah, I guess so. Wow. Also, I don't think you get high either from eating raw weed. A fact I know only because I tried to eat weed when I was 15 by just sticking it in a donut, just a big bud in a donut, and it did not work.
It didn't work at all.
You have to heat it up a little bit.
Is weed legal in Australia now? Can you walk into a dispensary?
No, never. No. You're a degenerate. You're a criminal. No.
Really?
It's so intense. No drugs. None of them.
I know.
Whatsoever.
It is very
funny. It's insane whenever I come back to LA and I land and I'm like, the smell of smog and weed in the air. And then I'll go to Sydney and it's just like, that's like crack cocaine.
That's nuts like, to me.
That's thing. So it's insane.
Yeah. No, it is. It's a very different world.
Yeah. So down maybe if it doesn't get the rats high, maybe it just gets them really like it's new. Nutritious. Powers them up. Maybe they're like really healthy, speedy rats.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, maybe it's like protein. You know?
I can't believe we haven't done a show there yet, Kurt. That's a place.
Begging for you guys.
They're begging for us.
They're begging.
Where in Australia are you from?
Sydney.
Oh, nice. Beautiful. It's an absolutely beautiful city.
I've heard of that one. Yeah. Great place to grow up.
Yeah.
I loved it.
Were you like in the city or were you out in the suburbs?
I was a bit of both. I was with my dad in the city and then I was with my mom in the suburbs.
Nice. We're in the city. I want to see if I remember it.
I was like, I grew up across from Hyde Park.
Oh, okay. That's gorgeous.
So it was city. Yeah. There are rats there too though. So But it's fine.
Oh, God.
They're
chill. Whenever I would like have late night F train rides back from Manhattan to Brooklyn, it was like inevitable that you'd see, let's say, five rats. Like, just you would see five. But then the ones...
On the train?
On the train, on the platform. I mean, always on the platform. But
okay.
On the train was more rare, but sometimes you would see them on the train.
The most disturbing, you would sometimes see them like Pizza Rat, very famous. You would see things like that quite often, like a rat just dragging something ridiculously big in a direction and you kind of root for it. And like somebody comes along, gives them a little teamwork and you're like, they're just like us. They're learning. The most disturbing ones were when you would see a drunk person asleep and you just see that rat walk right up their leg and right up their coat. And you're like, you don't know what to do. You're like, do you wake the person up and startle them? Or does the rat kind of just do its thing and then go elsewhere? It's just looking for pizza. But I probably saw that.
What a moral dilemma.
Four times?
Wow.
You'd say it. It was pretty bad. And then, when you saw him on the train, that nothing would clear it out quite the same. It's just rat walks onto a subway. Even when it's crowded, everybody's like, nah, nope, not doing it.
Okay, this complete novice with rats.
Rat novice here.
Actress.
Rat novice 42. I when I see a rat in New York, it doesn't bump me. Nah. But when I see a cockroach, that terrifies
me.
So I'd rather encounter a rat than a cockroach. Is that...
That's normal.
I think I feel the same way upon physically seeing them in my presence. I think I can tolerate a rat more than a bunch of cockroaches.
Are they doing anything? Look, unless you're like sleeping and they're climbing up your leg, are they doing anything else to you?
Nah, just kind of giving you that once over. Maybe reincarnation's real. Maybe that's an old uncle that's just coming to see how you're doing.
Or are they sizing you up? Are they like, is it a warning? What is it? Like, what is the fear of the rat?
I think Kurt knows. They're seeing if you're alive because they're going to start eating you if you're dead. So
okay, all right. Go.
I think that's what's at the base.
Right. Because I think I can outrun a rat or I can... I can figure it out. But with a cockroach in Australia, especially in the summers, like, they fly.
Oh, yeah.
Oh,
so I don't know where it's going. So if it's on the wall across from me and I spray it with some mortine, what do you call it here? Raid.
Combat.
Combat.
Raid or whatever, yeah.
Whatever.
Windex. Yeah.
Like I know it's going down. I know it's maybe crawling down the wall and then falling eventually. But if I do it in Sydney, that thing could come right at me.
Yeah. That's true.
That at
and
all.
That's terrifying.
When something you don't know can fly, flies. It is, it does, it never gets old. In every horror movie, it'll be like, oh, look, a demon. And then the wings pop out, and you're like,
it has wings. What are you going to do?
I thought we were
a land creature. You don't know what you're doing. You're against something way greater than you are.
Holy smokes. You said
you
it.
You can't navigate
so
this.
So wait, between rats and pigeons, where do you stand, Claude?
Great question.
Neutral. I'm neutral on both.
Neutral
maybe
on both.
Maybe I think I prefer a rat.
Okay.
A pigeon can fly
as well.
Pigeon
can fly.
And that's the only... Yeah.
I think I prefer a pigeon only because they seem to be having the dumbest thoughts at all times, and it's very funny to me.
Yeah. So there's no malice. They're just
there's
hanging
like,
around.
Dumb.
They're just
dumb,
bumping.
Dumb.
Whereas a rat could have ill intent.
Yes, that's how it feels.
Right. Great. Mm. Fair enough.
They're probably exactly the same animal in their brains.
Yeah, that's true. I wonder if they see each other and they're like, every time the pigeon's wings goes out, it's like, no, God. Didn't know you had it. Are you a good driver, Claudia?
I'd like to think so.
Pretty good.
I'm okay. You know what's funny, actually? I can't really drive in Australia anymore because I've driven here for so long and it's the other side
English
of the road.
The Australian side. Well, so, then you're probably doing better off than this gent. This one is crazy. Deanna Knutson sent this in. Or Knutson.
Uh-huh.
Let's go with Knutson, but Billy Knutson at one point, but maybe...
I know a Matt Knutson.
Okay, Deanna, we're sorry. Deanna K sent this in. Man rescued 2 days after driving car over California cliff and falling several hundred feet. So he drove off the PCH on his way to Big Sur and lived for 2 days.
God.
Whoa.
Whoa, that is for those
just on the cliff?
Down at the bottom.
He was down at the bottom.
In his car. Here we go. This was in People.com.
He was in his car? Oh, my God.
He made it. Yeah, he wasn't on a moped. He was on a car. This was written by Becca Wrongway Longmire, who's the best in the biz. A man has been rescued 2 days after accidentally driving his car off a cliffside in California. On Wednesday, California Highway Patrol Coastal Division confirmed they sent a team to search the coastline from Post Ranch Inn in Big Sur to Monastery Beach in Carmel. At approximately 8:30 a.m. local time, a man left work on Sunday and failed to make it home. The rescued male and his vehicle were located 400 feet down a cliff.
Wow.
They roped down to the victim and began to assess his injuries. The CHIPS Coastal Division Air Operations confirmed on Facebook, and they have a video of the rescue that you can watch. It's pretty crazy. He was frantically waving a makeshift flag, so they didn't know where he was. He was like trying to get rescued for two days. The rescued man told authorities he swerved to miss some deer. Educational podcast. Don't swerve on the PCH. We love animals.
Hit the deer.
Take them out.
Right? We love them.
We love all animals.
We do.
Drive right into them on the PCH.
Knock him down.
On the PCH.
We love animals.
We are obsessed with animals. I would give my life for a single deer, but if I'm on the PCH.
And one comes out.
You knock him down.
I'm aiming for its head.
Drive to kill.
God, the story's at the end of the podcast. So an airplane was already searching on a separate call and responded to the area of the cliffs below Highway 1. It arrived 20 minutes after to request the located vehicle that was found 400 feet over the side near the beach below. So it basically made it all the way down. The post said that the H-70 airplane responded, or whatever that is, from Paso Robles and arrived 40 minutes later. There are no beach access, no trails at the collision site, nor was the vehicle visible from the roadway at all.
That's crazy.
The aircraft hoisted the victim and the Big Sur fire chief from the crash. So they lowered a guy down and then or a woman down, and then they brought him back up. And before flying to the a medical center in Salinas for further treatment and care, the A-71 was instrumental in finding the crash site. Okay. They saved the guy. And he's appeared stable and suffered moderate injuries. 400 feet down a cliff.
Moderate injuries. That's amazing.
I know.
And also to be hidden. That means it's got to be pretty steep if it's hidden, right?
That terrifies me because you know how they're like, he was in the woods, he was stuck on a hike and he was deep in the terrain. And that's fine. And I'm like, yeah, that makes sense. Of course he's lost for 2 weeks. I get it. I get it. But this guy, the highway is just above, 400 feet above him. Like he's still there.
Yeah.
But he's not.
Yeah.
And that terrifies me.
I wonder what the deer's experience was. You know, the deer see like two lights coming at them and they think certain death and then they just, the problem goes away and they can just continue on their day like nothing. They didn't go help.
Oh, the deer didn't get hit at all. Didn't even get clipped.
I don't think so. Because they would probably, if it got clipped or hit, like it would be on the road, they'd be like, oh, something happened here maybe.
It's a crazy thing, though, that anybody who's ever driven the PCH up to Big Sur, it is so harrowing. It's so, like you feel like it would be one mistake death. Like you pay attention. Yes. You sweat while you drive is what I'm saying. It's a sweaty drive.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. I had to drive back. We had our buddy's, 40th birthday up at a place up there.
Mm-hmm.
And then I had to go back because it was also my wife's birthday as well.
Yeah.
And so I woke up in the morning after like a full night of really going for it. And then hopped into the car and started driving south on that PCH, just like white knuckling, hungover, sweating, just like, like every single turd was a nail biter for me that morning.
That's right.
Woo!
Speaking of a harrowing drive.
Yes.
No, it's not actually.
No.
But it's getting your license at the Hollywood DMV.
I can't imagine.
I remember when my mom and I moved here, we'd spoken to friends of ours who'd also immigrated over and they were like, don't go here, go to the one in Glendale. Or they were like, go to the one in, like, they would tell you the spots that would guarantee that you'd get your license, because the Hollywood DMV is like Hunger Games. Like, it's so intense there. And there are apparently like one of three driving instructors you'll get. There's, I don't know if this is the same now, this was 12 years ago. But there was the woman, there was the short older man, and then there was the young guy. And the woman was apparently the meanest, and she doesn't pass anyone. Mm-hmm. And my mother is a very timid driver, as is. and to the point where we had a cat growing up, and the third day in to us having the cat, she ran it over in the driveway.
Great.
So she...
Total nightmare.
She's also, fun fact, not fun, she's been carjacked not once but twice in her life, which is very interesting number-wise, you know?
Didn't know it was still a thing.
Also, things happen in threes, so we're all waiting for the third one. But she went for her driver's license at the Hollywood DMV, and she got the woman. And they were driving and around Hollywood, which is horrible anyway. They were driving down a side street.
Fantastic.
And a cat.
No.
Ran onto the road.
No. Oh.
And she swerved to try and miss it. And she ran over the cat.
Oh my gosh, twice.
And she went and the wheel went. I'm sorry. I feel like Peter's gonna hate this episode. And she was like, I think I should pull over. And the lady goes, just keep driving.
Oh my gosh.
So that's Hollywood. Welcome to Hollywood.
She kept driving, and the cat was under there for a good another 10 seconds.
And then lived.
You know what? For the kiddos listening, and then lived.
Yes, your mom needs a bike, is what we're saying.
No, I don't know if she should be driving. anyway, she didn't get her license. And then she went to Glendale, and she got her license.
If you move to L.A., go to Glendale to get your driver's license. You heard it here first. Crazy. That should be a sitcom, though. I mean, I'm sure it's been pitched 1,000 times, but Hollywood DMV, because when people think what Hollywood is a lot different than what it is when they show up. Like, Bananimals, if you've never been to L.A. and you're coming to Hollywood, come to L.A. Go to Hollywood for 45 minutes, find the star of your favorite actor on the Walk of Fame, and then hurry.
Smell the piss smell on top of that star, and then get out. There.
And hurry away as fast as you possibly can before one of the four or five Elmos that are falling apart, like The Walking Dead, ask you for money for a selfie.
Or both. Yeah.
Elmo did shiv another Elmo, right? That was the thing that happened recently.
Shivel me Elmo.
I thought we were just talking in...
Yeah, no, I'm not sure exactly what the thing was, but it was a violent confrontation between Elmos.
I like Shivel Me Elmo for a title for this episode.
I think that's funny.
Katie, let's make it Shivel Me Elmo.
Claudia, where can they find you? Let's plug away. Where can they
plug away?
Do you like them to follow you on social media?
Sure, I'm there every now and then. Good. I pop in and say hello, and then I step away for my mental health, and then I pop in and say hello.
Smart.
And then I scroll, and my mental health deteriorates, and then I step away for my mental health.
Very smart.
But yeah, I'm on Instagram. I'm there.
And just Claudia Dumit at Instagram?
Just Claudia Dumit. Claudia Dumit.
Nice.
That's it.
Mm-hmm. Well, thank you so much.
Oh my God, guys, this was so much fun. I learned so much.
It's educational.
It is. It's an educational podcast.
We all love animals. Let's make it very clear.
Guys.
We really do.
We love them.
Especially mammals.
We live for them.
Some fish, very few birds. But that's fine.
Yeah. I love rats. If you heard me on this podcast,
obsessed.
I'm neutral on
big
rats
fan.
And pigeons.
Big fan.
They're fine. They're fine. Okay. They're cool. They're great.
Bananas. Bananas is an Exactly Right Media production.
Our producer and engineer is Katie Levine.
The catchy Bananas theme song was composed and performed by Kahan.
Artwork for Bananas was designed by Travis Millard.
And our benevolent overlords are the great Karen Kilgariff and Georgia Hardstark.
And Lisa Maggot is our full human, not a robot intern.
Bananas.